Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy Wednesday, May the 14th. It's coming up on 10 minutes past 6 o'clock. Time to learn something new about how our bodies work. Time to learn more about what we can do to live a longer, healthier life with Dr. Oz. Dr. Mehmet Oz, perhaps one of the better known MDs in the country, thanks to his frequent appearances on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and for his series of books about you and your health. Today, he's here to talk with you about the information contained in You, the Owner's Manual, the updated and expanded edition, or U2, as Dr. Oz and his co-author MD, Michael Roizen, refer to it at times. U2 can ask questions this hour about how your body works, your health concerns, about lifestyle issues, so U2 will know more about what makes you healthier and younger and helps us all live longer, healthier lives. Here's the number to call, and we have open lines, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. Dr. Mehmet Oz is a professor and vice chairman of surgery at Columbia University, as well as medical director of the Integrated Medicine Center and director of the Heart Institute at Columbia Medical Center's New York Presbyterian Hospital. Dr. Oz is the health expert for the Oprah Winfrey Show and the Discovery Channel, and he is the co-author with Dr. Roizen of many books, including You, the Owner's Manual, updated and expanded edition. Good morning, Dr. Oz.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you so much for being with us. You have a lot of fans in Wisconsin. I can attest to that. We've talked often about the advice you've given on the Oprah Show. We all want to be healthier and younger, don't we?
Well, it's a goal all of us should have. There's a great survival value to it. And one of the things that's happened over the last few decades is that we've moved from desiring medicine to just keep us alive to desiring medicine to show us how to live longer. And it turns out that those clues are readily evident. Some of them are things, by the way, our mother told us to do. But we now have proof that she was right.
Yeah.
But some of it is stuff that folks don't recognize. And part of the big challenge across the board when we write our You books is to put the burden on you by making you appreciate that most of the big steps are ones that you need to take. And if you've got myths that are percolating through your mind, misleading you about what makes sense to do for your body, then you'll make some big mistakes.
Yeah, Mom was right when she said wash your hands, right?
That's for sure she's right on.
That's one of the ways to stop spreading infection.
It's actually the most effective way.
Yeah. Well, what was Mom wrong about? What are some of the myths?
Well, we have myths ranging from Q-tips, which probably were not a good idea. I mean, our ears are not supposed to have anything poked into them. In fact, part of the reason our fingers are the size they are is because that's about the smallest size that you should be putting in your ear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear about hygiene that is unwarranted, for example, earwax and body odors, have led a lot of folks to do things that probably aren't in their best interest. And there are many other examples like that of things that we did. I mean, when I was a little boy, I'd scrape my knee. My mother would put a little iodine solution on there. It turns out that you never want to put anything in a wound that you wouldn't put in your eye.
Oh.
The reason for that is, if you think about it, if you have an injury to your, you know, that breaks the skin, and you've got, I don't know, 150 bacteria get in there, right? But you've got 20 million of your own good guy cells there to protect you.
Mm-hmm.
If you put something that's toxic in that wound, you kill everything. You kill the 150 bacteria, but you also kill all the good cells that were protecting you. And the new bacteria that now are in the air and get into that wound don't have your resistance to fight over. So they can quickly grow that dead tissue.
Let's talk a little bit more about what's in You, or U2, the Owner's Manual. What's new?
Well, one of the things we realized after we published the original You book, and by the way, you're kind enough to mention Ms. Winfrey, part of the reason that we started doing a lot of the programs on the Oprah Show was because of the original version of this book, You, the Owner's Manual, and the most frequently asked questions we would get, and we had 80,000 questions after the very first show we did. I remember being, you know, crushed by them, trying to figure out what mistake did we make to generate so many questions. And many of the questions were very appropriate, but there were a couple that kept recurring that emphasized to us that we needed to add some more material to the book to address. And one of these was the liver. And the reason the liver is so important, besides the fact that it's our largest internal organ, is if you ask me any question about how we digest and metabolize food, if you ask me any questions about how we detoxify the many elements in our environment that could detrimental to our well-being, it all comes down to the liver.
Mm-hmm.
The liver works like a filter, like a sieve, that has to cleanse all the material coming through your body. So the hundreds of chemicals in the water, the earlier segment was on the Lake Superior habitat, and it's a good example. All of our Great Lakes even have toxins in them, which our body can cope with to a certain extent, but we have to replenish the restorative function of the liver. And the liver, ironically, this is why it was the foundation of so much Greek mythology with Sisyphus and the like, you know, the liver being continually eaten and regenerating itself, is that they recognized from war injuries probably in their among their men, that the liver could regenerate itself completely, even after devastating injuries. And in fact, all of you out there listening recognize that you can detoxify yourself, so to speak, by changing your diet and lifestyle, and your liver will remake itself. Even if you've been a lifelong drinker, if you've abused over-the-counter medications, you've had other damage to the liver by from hepatitis, your liver can remake itself, and by doing so, allow you to metabolize as you're supposed to.
We're going to check our weather forecast and then to calls for Dr. Oz, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Dr. Oz, the co-author of You, the Owner's Manual, updated and expanded edition, an insider's guide to the body that will make you healthier and younger. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Just about 18 minutes past 6 o'clock now on this Wednesday, May the 14th. We're going to be talking lots of politics coming up in the next couple of hours, including some analysis to the big win that Hillary Clinton scored yesterday in West Virginia over Barack Obama. Plus, we'll also talk about whether Barack Obama will or should offer Hillary Clinton the VP spot on the ticket. We'll wonder what you think about that coming up in our next couple of hours. Right now, we're talking about our health, and we're talking about what you can do to live a longer, healthier life. Our guest, we're very happy to have with us, Dr. Mehmet Oz. You know Dr. Oz from all of his books, including You, the Owner's Manual, updated and expanded edition, is the one we're talking about this hour. And you can join in with questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Before we go to the phones, Dr. Oz, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the liver, because not long ago on this program, I talked with an advocate of detoxing, how you can take supplements or fiber or other such programs or kits that you can find in natural food stores that will flush toxins out of your system, supposedly, to cleanse your system, to eliminate this. Is there something to this or not?
There's not much to the concept that you can detox yourself within a week or two. And actually, we did a program with the BBC looking at this very issue and took folks and divided them into two categories, put one on a very classic detox program, and the other one, the other group of people that were on a regular diet, and there was no difference in liver function studies or any of the other endpoints. However, if you were to do a detox program for several months, I do think that would make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think that the benefit of these shorter detox programs is that they actually allow you to reboot yourself. So you expect to have different tastes in your mouth. You expect to feel differently from day to day. And this is a big deal, I think, for a lot of folks, because the biggest challenge I face when I try to teach people about health is they already think they feel good. But ask yourself this question. You know, if the scale of perfect health for you was 1 to 100, where on that scale are you?
Mm-hmm.
If you're used to feeling 35 percentile of what you could feel, that feels normal to you. So all of a sudden, you begin to take for granted that's what life's going to be like without realizing how much more blissful it could be. The real challenge for most Americans to appreciate that health's not some sour, dour process. That it is an enjoyable, cool, hip experience to really feel good about life. And when we get folks to resonate to that message, then they begin to change their lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Well, what sorts of lifestyle or nutrition things can we do to help restore our liver or to detox naturally?
Well, for with the liver in particular, there are a couple of things that we know are pretty effective. The reason that your mom used to tell you to eat your broccoli was because crunchy cruciferous vegetables, cauliflower, broccoli, broccoli rabe, Brussels sprouts, all these have a lot of lutein in them, which is a important chemical to allow liver cells to regenerate themselves. That's one of the reasons that these are so clearly linked to reduction in cancer rates, because if the liver can't cleanse the material coming through it, it allows those toxins to spew into our body and increases cancer rates because of damage to our DNA. So that's one sort of simple one. Lecithin, which is an important precursor to a chemical that the liver sends out that allows it to get rid of some of the fats in the liver, is also important. And you can get lecithin from whole grains. You can get it from eggs. So these are pretty good sources of getting natural whole foods in our diet. We now understand why they're important. And if you do have a lot of liver issues and the function is not normal, there are things like milk thistle, which is an herb that actually is pretty effective in allowing the liver to recover, which has been used in some studies. So there are some herbs, there are some food changes, and of course there's avoidance of toxins that like alcohol, which, by the way, alcohol generally is a healthy thing to have in your diet. You want to have a drink or two a day. But if your liver is overwhelmed, you don't want to expose it to any kind of stress, and alcohol for sure is in that category. Perhaps a bigger risk for a lot of listeners are over-the-counter medications, which normally aren't a problem. But again, your liver has to detoxify everything it sees. So trying to really cleanse your palate and getting rid of a lot of the foods that aren't in our best interest, like trans fats and medications that we might take willy-nilly, is an important first step.
We'll go to the phones now. We have a caller about the liver. Cheryl in Superior, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I am wondering about a fatty liver. Over many years, decades of eating lots of ice cream and cheese and chocolate, I had my gallbladder out last August, but I'm realizing that what I've got, I think, is a fatty liver, the triglycerides, I believe. I can't remember my blood workup anymore, but it's showing that I've got a lot of fat in the liver. How do I actually remove and get rid of the fat in the liver?
Well, you're not alone. 15% of Americans have fatty livers. If you've got a big belly, that beer belly look, that's one of the best indices of us that you might actually have extra fat deposition. One little test you can do at home is look at your waist size, which you can't do with your belt, by the way, because guys always cheat. They put their belt underneath the fat. But, you know, get a measuring tape, put it at the level of your belly button, just on top of your hips, and stretch it around like a tailor would and see what your true waist size is. That number should be less than one half of your height. So if you're, and I'm 6'1", so that's 6 times 12 is 72 inches, plus 1 is 73 inches. Divided in half is 36 and a half inches. So if my waist size is more than 36 and a half inches, I got a problem. And that's a pretty good gauge for everyone out there. It works for men, women, and for kids. So you can have it evaluate your kids. Now, what do you do about it? One of the reasons the liver gets fatty is because the omentum, that's what's causing that big belly. The omentum fat, sounds like momentum without the M, is actually sending chemicals to the liver that poison it. So if you can reduce the amount of omental fat, which is not just from eating less fat, by the way. The main reason people get fat is actually not from eating fat. It's from eating too much simple sugars. Because the liver takes every chemical you eat, every food you eat. When you walk into a grocery store, I see you walking into a pharmacy, because those foods are as powerful as drugs that we take. All those chemicals come to the liver, and the liver reprocesses them to what you need. So if you need energy because you're running a marathon, you could eat fat, protein, or sugar. It doesn't matter. Your body's going to convert it to sugar. If you're sitting around doing nothing after Thanksgiving and you have turkey, meat, your body will break the protein in that meat down and turn it into fat. Because you don't need the energy, you don't need the protein. You're sitting around, your body will just store it as fat for a rainy day. And so that is exactly how the liver gets poisoned. It gets exposed to too much fat, not because you ate it, but because your body's metabolizing it. And then it begins to store that fat, and you basically turn yourself into a foie gras.
So try to avoid those overeating or those simple sugars.
Well, simple sugars in particular, but remember, you know, physical activity is part of the obesity epidemic as well. And, you know, we've written, and so has everybody else, lots of very useful information to help you lose weight. But if you lose the weight, your fatty liver will get better. Again, the liver has a remarkable rejuvenating opportunity.
Thank you, Cheryl, for the call. David in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David.
Hello. There were actually two things, but I'll mention my first thing. Overuse of antibiotics. I mean, they feed the cows and everything. I mean, antibiotics are great because it kills the germs without killing you, but why should you use it on countertops and just hands without cuts? It's just, I think it's just breeding resistant germs.
Yeah.
The other thing is, human bodies, millions of years of evolution to a hunter-gatherer type, nuts and fruits and stuff, and then in the last 1,000 years and stuff, they all were eating all this high-sugar stuff, and we're getting sedentary instead of walking a lot and running down a few animals. You know,
you got to run down some animals, Dr. Oz.
Well, you know, it's two excellent points. Mm-hmm. Our ancestors, even up to a few hundred years ago, would go hunting and expend tremendous amounts of energy. Today, to go hunting, you move the milk carton
right
out of the way. and so we have definitely altered our activity levels. But let me ask you, all the listeners, a question. How many of you walked to school when you were kids?
Yep, a whole 5 miles at least.
Right, it's both ways, uphill.
Yeah, but
you know,
seriously, we did. Yeah.
National data is in the United States, my generation, I'm 47,
mm-hmm.
About 60% of us walked to school.
Right.
Today's generation is less than 10%. So we're not letting our kids exercise. We don't even have sidewalks in our neighborhoods anyway. So there's a lot that we need to do to increase activity levels. To the other question of antibiotics, it is very true that we have too much use of antibiotics, not just in the milk, dairy and meat industry, which is being addressed, I think, slowly by organic farms. But we also have problems with overuse of antibiotics by people who think that putting it on your on your countertops or taking it willy-nilly if you have a little bit of a sore throat is in your best interest. It's not, because you will kill the good guy bacteria. Remember, in your intestinal tract, you've got trillions of bacteria growing. There are 10 times more bacteria in your intestinal tract than there are cells in your body. So you are mostly bacteria. And the reason that you're able to survive is those bacteria are able to digest your food with you and convert them to nutrients that can symbiotically get into your system and allow you to prosper. When you take antibiotics, you kill off a lot of those good guy bacteria. Now, unfortunately, as many of you have experienced, there are a couple bad guy bacteria in your gut as well. There are about 500 species that could kill you. They don't, because the good guy bacteria hold them back. But if you kill off the good guys, the bad guys will prosper, which is why if you've taken antibiotics recently, you should really take probiotics afterwards to try to resuscitate yourself and eat foods that are prebiotic in nature, foods that will nourish the bacteria growing in your gut.
Yogurts?
Well, not all yogurts. Yogurts mm-hmm. are the prototype, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. real yogurt that you can get in farm still, and there are some companies that still keep their live culture yogurt around are great, but many of the yogurts no longer have live culture. They've been sterilized. Again, it's thinking mm-hmm. it's safer, and it increases right. shelf life, but it's not what you want.
And we only have 30 seconds before a newscast. We should forget about those antibacterial soaps. Hello?
I'm here.
Yeah, should we throw away those antibacterial soaps and just use Ivory or something?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
There's no debate about this. Every major national society has agreed you need to throw away all that junk. That's not good for us, not good for the environment. Yeah, a regular soap is as pure as it can be, is as good as it is.
Dr. Oz, our guest, and more of your questions coming up after the latest news from National Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 6:36 on this Wednesday, May the 14th. So what's the secret to a long, healthy life? Well, according to my guest this hour, it's good knowledge of your own body, how it works and how it works for you, and knowing what you can do in terms of smart lifestyle decisions. We are talking with Dr. Mehmet Oz. He is the co-author of You, the Owner's Manual. It's now updated and expanded. And he's here to talk with you about your health, to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And back to the phones, Esther in West Allis is with us now. Hi, Esther, you're on the air.
I've been searching for 15 years for a diagnosis, which I believe to be spinal artery steal syndrome. And in the process, I've seen so many doctors, and looking at their reports, there are errors. The very latest, and I cannot overcome this, the very latest is my blood pressure reading left arm sitting, and my left arm is included axillary, so they cannot get a reading there. I was off for my right arm. Mm. This is only one example of so many errors, and I don't know how to overcome this. The doctors believe the doctor's reports and don't pay any attention to what I say.
Yeah, Esther, talk it over my head, Dr. Oz, but maybe not yours. I know you can't diagnose her on the air, but any advice?
Esther, I can, if I was on a private line, I'd give you some advice, but it's not right without having more medical history from you. But let me just go over a couple of things. Yeah, one of the challenges we have in the healthcare system right now is that there's a breakdown in the trust that needs to occur between physicians and patients. You know, we have a very wise covenant in our society between physicians and patients that needs to be maintained. And when you don't have open communication lines, then it gets broken down. Let's start off with the basics. The word doctor comes from the Latin doctore, for teacher.
Mm-hmm.
So our job is to educate you. It's not to lecture you without hearing your thoughts back, because a good teacher won't do that. It's not to be God and just offer a diagnosis and walk out of the room. It's got to happen in a more conjugal way where both sides play a role. That also means the patient has to come to the office prepared. So we've spent a lot of time working with the Joint Commission, which is the nation's health safety watchdog organization, trying to teach people how to be smart patients. And in order to be a smart patient, you have to know how to find Dr. Wright, which means you got to be able to audit the healthcare system. You got to know how to take a personal health history so you know, for example, what your family history is, which is not, by the way, a grandmother twice removed who has a heart attack at age 95. It's someone who's younger than 65, who is a first-degree blood relative, you know, a parent, a sibling, maybe one removed from that, but not more. And those illnesses that occur before 65 tend to be more genetic in nature. Two-thirds of how you age and two-thirds of what drives your health is environmental. It's not from your genes. Genes are important, but only a third of your overall health profile, your genes. So as a smart patient and you're suffering through several ailments, you should be able to become a world expert on these problems and be able to educate docs. And if your docs aren't listening to you, switch docs.
Yeah.
But you will find physicians who want to hear from you. You know why? Because it makes our life easier. When I have a patient who comes into my office, and I'm a heart surgeon, and they say, hey, you know, I've had these symptoms. Here's what makes it better. Here's what makes it worse. Here's what I'm doing about it now. My goodness, you did half my job for me. You just told me your diagnosis. You told me how you're managing it. All I've got to do is tweak it a little bit, and we're off and going.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Esther. Laura in Sheboygan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. I'm 33 years old. I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism 2 years ago. I have since gained about 15 pounds. And I'm just wondering if there's a way to treat this naturally. I'm on some kind of thyroid stimulant right now. I forget the name.
Synthroid.
But I'm wondering if I could treat this naturally and stop the weight gain.
Sure. Are you on Synthroid or Thyroid Armor? Which one?
Synthroid.
Okay. And it turns out that the most common hormone abnormality that we treat anyway in both men and women, but especially prevalent in women, is thyroid disease. And it's caused by several different reasons, but one of the most important is that your immune system begins to see your thyroid as an enemy and begins to kill it. It's called Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons that we think that happens so frequently is vitamin D deficiency.
Ah.
And so, especially if you're living in Wisconsin in the winter months, you're not getting enough sun exposure to make vitamin D. So I would strongly encourage you and your family and a lot of listeners out there to start taking 1,000 to 1,200 units of vitamin D. All of our national guidelines for vitamin D supplements are increasing. In Europe, they already have increased because Europeans have even more of a problem than Americans with vitamin D. And by the way, vitamin D is also important, we know, for cancer. Prevention. It's involved with heart disease, obviously osteoporosis, but also potentially multiple sclerosis. I mean, there are a lot of good reasons, in addition to the fact you probably have less flus if your immune system is strong. And if by taking vitamin D, you avoid the immune system miscalculating what bad and what good is, and you might reduce incidences of thyroid disease. Once you've gotten hypothyroidism, then there unfortunately are not any really great alternative approaches that I know of that can help you get off the thyroid medication. But the good news is the thyroid medications, both Thyroid Armor, which is the sort of the natural version of it, or Synthroid, both of which are very effective and relatively safe because they're just giving you back a hormone your body normally should have been making. With adequate levels of these medications, that your body should be able to get back on track again. The fact that you're gaining weight makes me concerned that you're still undertreated. That you, just because you're taking the pill doesn't mean you're taking the right amount of the pill.
Mm-hmm.
You might need to actually increase the dosing, and your physician should check your blood levels to double-check that.
Thanks for calling, Laura. That vitamin D is a real miracle vitamin, isn't it? My husband's a cardiologist, recommended he do the 1,000 unit in addition to a multiple because of his some heart disease.
Without any question,
mm-hmm.
the single biggest vitamin deficiency in this country is vitamin D. And it is in our milk because it's added. But it's the vitamin D that's added to the milk may not be as strong as the D that we actually use in our bodies. Our body makes D3, vitamin D3 from sun. And, you know, our ancestors, when they had tuberculosis, would be sent to asylums, sanitariums.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that was done, they thought was for the fresh air. It turns out it was from the sun that these people were getting better. And this has actually been proven very recently in a wonderful Scientific American article where they demonstrated, again, that vitamin D, when given to immune cells, allows those immune cells to actually kill off the tuberculosis bacterium. So, you know, it's pretty powerful stuff, and that's a wonderful example of how a little bit of insight into how the body works will take you a long way. If I knew, and now you do too, that I can reduce the chance of my getting a flu, for example, or cancer down the road by taking vitamin D, I'll probably pay attention to it a bit more.
Yeah. I have to say this would be a good time to let you know, Dr. Oz, that I have a good friend who knew I was going to be talking with you today, and she said, he's changed my life because I follow his advice, including and maybe especially the vitamin D advice. She now has a better mood, more energy. She's losing weight. She's exercising, and she gives a lot of the credit to vitamin D.
Well, it's one of those tools that I think most Americans can benefit from. There are so many other ones. The omega-3 fats, these are the fish oils, but you also find them in walnuts and flaxseed oil, and these purslane. These omega-3s are very beneficial to us, and historically humans used to have a lot of omega-3 in their diet. Today, the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 is 20 to 1. Used to be 1 to 1. So we're eating too much of the other vegetable oils, too much saturated fat and trans fat. But the good news is that it's not hard to get omega-3s. You can get them by changing your diet, including more of the healthy oils in your regular program. And without doing anything else, you can still be lying on the couch all day long. Without doing anything else, those kinds of simple activity changes in your diet will make a dramatic difference in how you feel and also how your body responds to the stresses of life.
Yeah.
As an example, perimenopausal syndrome. You know, it turns out that you can actually reduce the symptoms of perimenopausal symptom by increasing the amount of omega-3 fats in your diet.
And so if you do the salmon and the walnuts and all that, should you still take an omega-3 supplement, a fish oil caplet?
If you're doing all the right things in your diet, you don't have to supplement. Mm-hmm. However, we've done some surveys on Real Age. RealAge.com is a great website that helps you figure out your physiologic age rather than your chronologic age. So instead of answering someone when they ask you how old you are by doing the math between your birthday and today, say, okay, how old does my body think I am? That's the real question you want to know. And so if we're smart about this, then we'll be able to figure out without much of a burden what your physiologic age is. And if you do that, then you'll begin to think, my goodness, you know, there's all kinds of things that I can do to alter that in an intelligent way.
Maddie in Wapaka, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I heard a show on Joy Cardine's show, your show, about vitamin D. And I have a grandson who is attention deficit disorder. And so anyway, I had him tested for vitamin D, and sure enough, he was low on vitamin D. And so now he's taking 2,000 IUs of vitamin D. And what I want to know is there a toxic level of vitamin D? The guest that was on Joy's show before indicated it was around 10,000 IUs or over 25. I use per pound.
Yeah, is there too much of a good thing here?
There's almost always too much of a good thing with vitamins in general. There are very, very, very high doses required before you get into a dangerous range. The one exception being vitamin A. With vitamin D, you know, if you're in the sun 15 minutes, you'll generate about 10,000 units of vitamin D.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. So you can generate a lot of vitamin D. Now, as you get tanned, your body will naturally block the extra amount of vitamin D conversion. People who are dark-skinned are particularly resistant to getting too much vitamin D, but your body will try to regulate. For example, in the winter months in Wisconsin, your cholesterol levels will go up because cholesterol is converted to vitamin D by the sun.
I didn't know.
So because there's less sun, whatever little bit there is, you want to have it converted. I generally don't like to take pharmacologic doses of any vitamins. So with vitamin A, less than 5,000. With vitamin D, I would rarely take more than 10,000 units. But if you have the flu coming on, or if you really don't feel like your body's able to deal with whatever infection's inflicting it, people do take 50,000 units a day. I just wouldn't take it every day.
Okay. Let me see if we're going to have some sunshine today, and then we'll take more questions for Dr. Oz. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 11 minutes before 7 o'clock, coming up after 7, we'll talk presidential campaign politics. Our next caller for Dr. Oz, who is co-author of You, the Owner's Manual, the updated and expanded edition, is Dennis in Wausau. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I understand cumin is used quite a bit in India for cooking, and I also understand that they have one of the lower cancer rates. Do you suppose that that would be a help to any of us in this country?
Not only do I think it's going to be helpful for cancer, but a lot of folks don't recognize that the incidence of Alzheimer's in India is one quarter that of this country. And one of the arguments for why this is so, besides the family structure and the culture of lifelong learning, is that they eat a lot of cumin and turmeric in their diet. This is a source of curry sauce. It's, by the way, also found in mustards. So it turns out that this spice seems to actually slow down the deposition of a chemical in our brain, a glue in our brain that's associated with Alzheimer's disease. So I would include curried foods at least once a week in my diet, or a tablespoonful of mustard in my diet a couple times a week in order to get both the Alzheimer's benefit and potentially the cancer benefit.
Good. Another reason to go to that Indian buffet. Maggie in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Oz.
How are you?
I'm wondering, why do we gain weight when we get older, and why do doctors kind of discount that? They always say, oh, walk more. Oh, you need to walk faster. But, you know, when you are walking and you're eating right, but you're still gaining, why does this happen?
Well, the reality is that as we get older, we begin to lose muscle mass. Mm-hmm. Now, that might not seem very important, but it turns out that muscle burns 50 times more calories than fat does when it's being used. Now, if you think about it, when you're going through menopause, your ovaries don't just stop making estrogen, they stop making testosterone. Without testosterone, you don't maintain muscle mass. Without muscle mass, you don't have that natural metabolic furnace chewing through the calories you eat. And before you know it, you can't eat more than a peacock before you start putting weight on.
Right.
And so the most important thing that folks need to do as they get older is continue to aggressively do weight work. Now, I don't mean barbells and deadlifting. I'm talking about using your body as a gym. But things like yoga, doing pull-ups, push-ups, these are very, very efficient exercises that won't hurt you when done correctly, and they will maintain muscle mass. So you can continue to eat foods that you used to enjoy when you're 30. When you're 60, you still won't put much weight on.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much. Once again, I took your book home to do my homework for this hour, and as usual, my husband got to it before I did, and he started telling me all these things he was going to do in terms of his fitness routine that he picked up in your book. You have talk about doing weight training and the yoga stretches as well as the aerobic stuff.
We spent a lot of time trying to make it as accessible as possible, and we realized that we didn't want to talk around these problems, that many of the questions that have been asked today are very direct, straight-up questions. Mm-hmm. They're not yes-no answers, but they have concrete answers. What's the dose of vitamin D? What do I do with my thyroid? Why do I gain weight? These are all questions that not only are felt to, are to be important by a majority of the people who write us questions, but more importantly, they have pretty concrete medical answers. So we try to give those answers to you together with action steps. And that's why Mike and I work together so well, because my background is always, although I'm a heart surgeon, I've always loved making television. And I love talking about the imagery of why things work the way they work and trying to explain what's really happening inside your body. But you need to temper that and add to that the action steps that make a difference, like whether you take curry sauce or mustard in your diet. And so Mike Roizen's background is databases. He's really, really good at looking at thousands of articles and figuring out what really makes a difference. And so by putting us together, which a good friend of ours did actually, it's a favor to both of us, we've been able to create material information that I think is pretty useful to a lot of Americans.
Lucas in Burnett is with us now. Hi, Lucas. You're on the air.
Hello, doctor. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question. My wife, she's pretty young. She's 25, and she have significantly very high blood pressure, and doctors are working on it. They suspect some things with kidneys, but my question is there any, like, home, like, what I can do or what we can do to try to put it down?
The reason this question is so important is the number one cause of aging in America is high blood pressure.
I didn't know that.
And so it's more important than cigarette smoking even. So any of you out there who do not know your blood pressure, next time you're at a mall, visiting a doctor's office, whatever, find some excuse to get to it. They have free machines they sell in drugstores now. It's a great party gift. Just take it and quickly check your blood pressure. You want to be optimal. You don't want to be average. The average blood pressure in America is 130 over 85. The average American dies of heart disease, so you don't want to be average. The optimal number is 115 over 75. If you're young, you can still get high blood pressure because we're now seeing more and more young people who have extra belly fat. That belly fat pushes on your kidneys, and the kidneys regulate your blood pressure ultimately, and they can sense that pressure, and they will often elevate your blood pressure. That's why the metabolic syndrome, that's the typical 45-year-old that's starting to put belly fat on, will develop high blood pressure together with bad cholesterol and sometimes diabetes. Now, if you're 25 and thin, I'm making this up, then you actually have to look more seriously at whether or not the arteries that go to the kidneys are damaged, because then the blood pressure going to the kidneys will seem low, the kidneys will panic, and they will try to send messages to elevate the blood pressure since they think the problem is not just in the kidneys but everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know any differently. And so your physicians with this young woman are, I'm sure, looking into that and many other possible causes of blood pressure in the young person. But the garden variety disease that afflicts so many Americans is relatively easily dealt with by people changing their diets and lifestyles. Now, the reason that's so important is because in America, we typically treat high blood pressure with medications. And when you give people medications like a beta blocker, they actually will gain weight. So ironically, although you're dealing with the crack in the wall, which is the high blood pressure, you're not dealing with the underlying reason why the person has the high blood pressure. So if you can actually cope with that problem by losing the weight, you don't need the medication, then you won't put more weight on, and all of a sudden you're off a couple medications, which is great because it turns out that if you're on more than six medications, including over-the-counters, the chance of you're having a drug-drug interaction that could be lethal is 94%.
Good luck to you, Lucas, to you and your wife. Mary Kay in Kenosha emails, at what numbers should a person turn to medication to lower cholesterol?
Well, I would never treat cholesterol itself with a medication because cholesterol itself is not linked to heart disease.
Okay.
Only how it's carried is linked to heart disease. And so if you have a lot of the lousy or LDL cholesterol and you're above 170, which is a big number, but that's actually national guidelines, then I would treat it. If you have risk factors for heart disease, then I would, or you've had a heart problem, you have to get it below 100, and some would even say below 70. So we treat it depending on whether or not you're having any evidence of heart problems. And by the way, if you have high blood pressure and a high cholesterol, then I'd be more aggressive treating it because high blood pressure is going to, like a fire hydrant, scrape off the walls of your arteries. Your cholesterol is like the body's plaster. It's going to seek to repair it. And so if the plaster you're using, the lousy LDL cholesterol, is a bad quality cholesterol, you're going to get a poor repair. So you want to lower that bad stuff. The good cholesterol, the healthy HDL cholesterol, needs to be above 45 ideally, but we do not have medications to do that right now that are that effective.
We just have a minute, but Arlene in Madison emails, what do you eat, Dr. Oz, on a typical day to keep you healthy?
Well, I gave up food many years ago. Yeah. So I'm a big nut eater. Mm-hmm. I keep walnuts and almonds and hazelnuts near me all the time. My typical breakfast is there's a Greek yogurt called Total. Mm-hmm. I just happen to buy it here in New York, but you can get any yogurt. So I take non-sugary yogurt, not yogurt that's got that stuff added to it. And I have it with blueberries or strawberries, and, you know, straight food. That's my breakfast, or I'll have oatmeal for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
My lunch is usually a little bit of salmon with a salad. I eat sort of the same thing every day, by the way, because I don't want to have to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, it's easier.
Then dinner, whatever my wife makes. My wife is vegan, so we eat mostly vegetables. I do eat meat, but very uncommonly.
Yeah.
And that's my typical diet. And my weight's been the same since I played football in college.
Well, Dr. Oz, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with our listeners, and thanks for making all this information so accessible.
Great pleasure. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Mehmet Oz, he is the co-author of many books, including You, the Owner's Manual, the updated and expanded edition. Thanks to Carmen Jackson for producing the hour. Thanks to Michelle Kofel for on-air production. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.